trail.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it, Dan? Is it working?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's working.
Oh, good. And the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. And I'm here with Dan Green. This is Nick Hazelton. We're on the Freedom Fiends tonight. And everybody's heard about the attacks in France. I have not been paying attention a whole lot to them. I don't like to view the news because it's just sad. And I don't like to think about those sort of things. But it's pretty serious. And it's a pretty big deal going on over there in Europe. And Dan, you are in Scotland.
I am. And just for anyone who's not clear on how close we are, I mean, I could fly from here to Paris in about like 2 hours or so. So very, very close to all this kind of thing. So like it's been obviously, I know it's been a big deal sort of worldwide, this thing, but it's particularly like quite a big deal here. A lot of fear and paranoia going on just now. And, you know, to some extent, understandably so. Just to recap, if anyone's, you know, been hiding under a rock, the other day there was a terrorist attack in Paris. 129 people, I think, have been killed. There was bombs that went off outside a French football match. There was shootings taking place, I think, one in a cafe and one at a concert at the Bataclan Theatre, where a band called the Eagles of Death Metal were playing. So this has been quite a big thing. Also, I was just to give some perspective as well. I know it's a sort of different scale of attacking things, but for example, I'm closer to this than some Americans were to, say, New York on 9/11, just to give a bit of sort of perspective on this sort of thing. Has it been reported quite a bit? I imagine it's been reported quite a bit in the American media, Nick.
It has a lot. As soon as it started, I was seeing things pop up in my news feed, and a lot of people have been talking about it. Pretty much my whole Facebook feed is people's profile pictures with the French flag as the layover.
Yeah, that's become a thing now on Facebook, isn't it? When something happens, you can immediately change your profile picture to reflect your views, which is interesting.
Yeah.
I got off Facebook a while ago. I'm taking a break from it. It's too much.
It's a good choice.
I need to be not on Facebook just now. Right, so anyway. So this has led to for example, one of the immediate responses to this was the French the day after or something, they bombed Raqqa in Syria. You knew that was going to happen anyway, didn't you? I mean, you just kind of thought, as soon as this happened, I was waiting for, you know, news that someone was going to be bombed somewhere, and it was obvious it was going to be Syria, probably. I mean, I don't really see... I know it's probably the French Parliament probably got together and went, right, we've got to bomb someone now, you know, like everyone expects them to immediately bomb someone afterwards. But they claim it's a ISIS stronghold and no civilians were harmed and things, you know. I don't know that for sure, but they would say that anyway, I suppose. But it's just, it's one of these things where it's stoked up a lot of things again. I mean, obviously, this whole thing, same as the US is in Europe, this whole Islamic terrorism thing has been like a big thing, you know, since 9/11, it's been kind of on and off. I mean, the only sort of big attack we had here was the 7/7 bombings. I think that was in 2005, actually, if I'm not mistaken. But this has been the sort of bigger one more recently. And, I mean, there's a lot of issues around this as well, because Europe's been kind of... Over the last year anyway, we've had what we've been terming the refugee crisis, because there's been unbelievable amounts of refugees from, you know, a lot of them from Syria and other places too, that have been flooding into Europe. And we had things like, for example, we had Sweden and Germany, who at first were saying that they would open their borders and they would just take in as many refugees as they could. And then, like, I would say a few months ago, Germany stopped that policy, so did Sweden, because of the vast amount of people that are flooding Europe just now. And even there's been different reactions across Europe to this with different countries. In Britain, we've got refugees coming in, but it's not kind of in the same scale at the moment, because they're coming in from like through like Greece, the Isle of Lesbos and things like that. So it's affecting mainland Europe quite a bit more. And one of the things about this is that I've noticed recently, since this has sort of been happening, there's been quite a rise in sort of right-wing parties in Europe since then. For example, well, Hungary's response to this crisis was to put up like a razor wire fence and things like that. Yeah, yeah, they've been taking a different tack than some countries. One of the things about it is, though, like, you've got, even in places like, for example, Switzerland now, I mean, we all think of Switzerland as being quite a sort of liberal country and stuff like that, but even they've seen the rise of like a, I can't remember the name of the party actually, but like quite an anti-immigration party have been doing well in polls there. You have like in Poland, this conservative party, again, I think they actually took power in the last election. So there's been a lot of this kind of feeling that started up before this, and this is obviously now with these attacks in Paris, it's going to probably, you know, it's going to give people a lot of these right-wing anti-immigration people a lot more, it's going to give them a lot more thing, it's going to give them a lot more fuel for their fire, basically. I don't know, have you heard much about this refugee crisis that sort of preceded these attacks? Has that been sort of talked about in American media much?
Yeah, definitely. Not as much as our own immigration issues, but definitely. We've talked about it in the school civic classes. I know that last year, and yeah, definitely. We've been talking about that here.
Yeah, I mean, it's been like massive news over here for obvious reasons. But that's one of these things. I mean, even in Germany now, you've got this kind of thing going on where you've got the sort of far right reasserting itself quite a bit. There was this mayor, I think she was a mayoral candidate for Cologne, and she was working with immigrants and stuff, and she was stabbed. She didn't die, as far as I know, but she was stabbed by a guy who had like sort of neo-Nazi links and stuff. And like you have, for example, this group that are, they're all over Europe, but they're quite big in Germany, and they're called Pegida. And they're one of these groups that are, I think, you know, they go under the term of, we're opposed to the, I think they use a word like Islamification of Europe. And they've been holding marches and things. I think they've held one or two here, but they haven't been that well attended. The far right don't do as well here as they do in some other places, thankfully. Thank you. You know, but like, understand that they've been, again, asserting themselves. And again, since this French thing, the leader of Front National, Marine Le Pen, again, another far-right group, she's been saying she doesn't want one more immigrant in France and this kind of thing. So this is the sort of thing that preceded this, you know, and it's funny because, you know what Europe's like? Europe's one of these places that, you know, has erupted into war periodically. Actually, I remember it was funny, there was a Saturday Night Live. It was years ago, and I think it was Seth Meyers who was doing the sort of weekend update bit, and he was doing like a wee segment called like a look at Europe, and he kind of made this joke. He was like, you know, why are you all fighting with each other? It's not like you all speak different languages and your grandparents all killed each other in World War II. You know, he's not wrong, to be fair. So it kind of, I don't know, it's a bit concerning, this whole thing. I mean, because just now, you know, since these attacks, of people in Paris, people have gone on right to the fear straight away, which is understandable. I mean, like, even people here in Scotland, I mean, we've not had any of these sort of attacks in Scotland, but I mean, I'm not saying it couldn't happen. I don't know, it probably could. I mean, but the amount of fear that, you know, and see as well, what kind of disturbs me as well, see the anger. I mean, I think it was it just before these attacks? There's a, I don't know if you have heard much, there's a terrorist that was kind of, he made, I keep using these terms, terrorist and that, but you know, just go with me and I'll take you on a journey through my limited knowledge. There's a guy called, they were calling him Jihadi John, and he was some English guy who was in Syria, and he was involved with like IS and things, and he was killed in a drone strike. I think it was just before these Paris attacks. And I went into work, and I remember like a guy came up to me, and this guy's quite a sort of liberal guy, you know, and he was like, oh, he should have died slower and stuff. And I was like, man, like, I mean, right, I'm not saying this guy was a good dude and I would not want to hang about with him, and I don't condone any of this stuff at all. I'm not apologizing for any of this stuff at all. But like, see this whole thing about this whole, this anger that stokes up in people, which is, I've really been seeing a lot, you know, it's like, it's really bringing out people's sort of sadistic side. And I mean, I think obviously people like this, I mean, I'm one of these kind of, I don't think that, you know, extreme violence is the way to fight violence, you know, and I don't think that like torturing people who have done things, I think that basically stoops you down to their level, you know, and I think we kind of have to be better than that, you know, because I find that very dangerous, that kind of thinking. And I've been seeing it creep in a lot, and I'm kind of concerned about what the aftermath is going to be for this. I mean, there's already been talks of like clamping down in security here, as you can imagine, and people are welcoming this, you know, there's newspapers and things that are, they're welcoming a clampdown of our individual liberties and things like that. And I mean, you're a young man, Nick, you're a young fellow. How well do you remember 9/11?
Not at all. I was 2 or 3 when it happened.
Oof, you are a young man.
Yeah.
I thought I was young when 9/11 happened, because I was at school when it happened. So I thought I was quite young, because I do remember it, and I remember it happening at the time. And at the time, I didn't really, I was like kind of, you know, what's Islamic terrorism? You know, that was a new sort of concept for me. But we will revisit this after the break.
Burn.
And I'll try not to scare everybody. We will be back.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
In Survivor Max 2, School Bites, Max must scavenge through a wasteland swarming with the undead. Desperate to find the medicine he needs, he discovers a community of survivors at his former school. Has he finally found the safe haven he's been looking for, or will he discover that school bites? Look for Survivor Max on Facebook, read reviews on Amazon, and read Chapter 1 at SurvivorMax.com.
We are back on the Freedom Fiends, Dan Bean and Nick Hazelton. And I'm in Scotland, and unless you've been hiding under a rock, you'll have heard of what's been happening in France. I'm very close to Paris, you know, where we live. Europe's very small compared to the US, so like, I'm not far away at all. So I've been talking a bit about this because it is a big issue. And I mentioned kind of before the break how the fear level here has gone pretty much through the roof, understandably. I mean, I've noticed that, like, you know, I've seen Obama and stuff on TV. He is a liar, a socialist, and his feet stink. Important to throw that in there. It's in the Fiend's Handbook, so you've got to put that in, you know. We all get issued with the Fiend's Handbook when we come on. So I know that this has been big news in America as well. I mean, is there a kind of climate of fear going on in America just now? Is this added to it, do you think, Nick?
Say that again. You dropped out for a second.
I was just saying, have you still got a climate of fear going on in America? I assume you do. And like, is this attack like maybe added to that, do you think?
Yeah, definitely a bit. I've seen a lot of people talking about it, and it's been an interesting response. You know, it all ranges from who cares about France, let's care about other things, to, well, we really need to do something, intervene in Syria now, let's help the French out. It's interesting the scope of people, and it's not just anarchists that I'm talking about. I'm talking about the everyday people I see on my news feed, and it's definitely scaring a lot of people, and a lot of people care, which is nice to see that people have empathy for France, and I think that's important. But yeah, definitely people are talking about this could happen to the United States too, or in Canada as well. You know, people are definitely frightened about it, and I don't know. I haven't seen any politicians talk about it yet, but definitely the citizens are a bit concerned, to say the least.
How do you feel about it? Are you worried?
I don't know exactly how to feel. I feel safe where I'm at. I'm confident that nobody's going to target anywhere near me, because I live out in the backwoods, and the nearest town is its main industry is logging, so I'm not concerned too much about being attacked by anybody, especially Islamic extremists. But I do worry that if somebody I know might get harmed and in another larger city, and I wouldn't be surprised if it happened here too.
It's funny how it can kind of like these things can creep up on you. I'll tell you a wee story, and I'm not that embarrassed about it. I kind of was a bit at the time. It was when, I think it was after the 7/7 attack, so maybe, is that nearly 10 years ago? I think it is. I should really look these things up. And I remember I was on a bus after it, and this is before I was like an anarchist and stuff, and I was really quite a believe the mainstream media sort of guy. And I was on a bus, and there was like a sort of, there was a guy on the bus who was like, you know, probably, you know, Pakistani or Indian or something like that. And he was sitting there, and I remember he had this big backpack on, and he was sweating, and he looked really nervous, and he was looking around and stuff. And I remember I was kind of frozen with fear, and I was like, do I get off the bus? You know, what's going to happen here? And then I was like, no, calm down, it'll probably be fine. And then he was making these kind of movements and stuff, and I was honestly, my heart was jumping out my chest, because I kept thinking, maybe I should go off at this stop, maybe I should go off, no, just I'll wait for another stop and I'll see what happens. And I was really, really worried about this, and I could kind of see that a couple of people on the bus were like that too. So the bus goes on a bit, and then it stops outside a college. And the guy gets off and he runs into the college, right? This guy was probably worried about an exam or something, right? And because of all the fear that I'd been hit on and stuff, I was assuming that there was a chance that he was going to blow the bus up, you know? Oh. And then after it, I felt kind of daft, you know, like, but that shows what it will do to you. You know, I feel kind of silly about saying that now, but at the time I was quite young and I was quite impressionable, and I was buying all this mainstream media stuff. And that's the thing. He was probably just worried about an exam he had to sit, and that was it. But like, it's funny how these kind of things can play in your mind like that.
Oh yeah, absolutely, the paranoia. Yeah, you're totally right. I've never had an experience like that, because I don't travel in public very often, but I definitely hear people's stories about that, and every once in a while I get an older family member, they'll point somebody out and say something mildly racist or just overly paranoid. We'll be back.
We will, after this trip to the market.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
back. This is the Freedom Fiends. This is Nick Hazelton. I'm here with Dan Green. We're talking about the attacks that happened last Friday in France. And it's a real tragedy. And we're talking about kind of the reactions of people in Europe compared to people in the United States. I'm here in Oregon, west side of the United States, and Dan is in Scotland. And we're talking about this because it's a really terrible thing to have happen. And we've had numerous terrorist attacks over the years. And I guess now it's France, I guess England and the UK have had at least one, and we've had at least a couple here, including Boston and 9/11. And it's really terrible to see, and it's interesting to see the reactions from different people. And of course, anger is one of the immediate ones, and I think that it's totally understandable, right? If I lost anybody that I knew, I would be super angry. And but it's not a good reasoning tool. Anger is not something that you should use to let you sway your decisions, and I think that can be damaging. And I think that I see that with a lot of the people that I see talking about it, especially here in the United States. I don't have very many European friends on Facebook, and that's usually where I get most of my news, but there is a lot of anger, and I do worry, like you brought up, I think last segment or maybe the segment before, and that people are wanting to strike back with full force and saying, man, these people need to be lynched or whatever, and really terrible things. And I totally get where that sentiment is coming from, and it's totally understandable, but it's not helpful in any way. What are your thoughts on that, Dan?
No, I agree, man. And I kind of said in the first segment that, like, France, almost what it was like the day after or something, they bombed Raqqa in Syria as a response. And it's been interesting because, so the Labour Party here are not in power, they're the opposition. And they're the sort of, they're supposed to be the left party, you know, the Conservatives are supposed to be the right and Labour's supposed to be on the left. They're really both standing in the middle of the road, really, but like, Labour recently got a new leader, this chap called Jeremy Corbyn. And Jeremy Corbyn he's more of a socialist than they've had as a leader in a while. You know what I mean? He makes Tony Blair look like a conservative. You know, he's quite to the left, and he's quite anti-war, actually. I think it was before he became leader, he floated an idea that people should be allowed to choose or not whether they fund the armed forces through taxes. I thought was a pretty decent idea. Wow. Yeah, that didn't go down well. I think he's since backtracked on that, you know. But like, I mean, right, Jeremy Corbyn, just so we're straight here, he is a liar, a socialist, and he dresses like a geography teacher. He does. He really does. So I just want to get that out of the way. I'm not a Corbyn supporter. The man needs a book on economics and he needs it quickly. He probably needs economics in one lesson, you know. if anyone hasn't read that, Henry Hazlitt's a good book. Yeah, but like, he's even like, for example, he's said that he doesn't want his party to vote for, you know, airstrikes and stuff on Syria. And he is quite anti-war, and he's sort of sticking to his guns, and he is being roundly criticized, you know, not just by David Cameron, our beloved Prime Minister, but by a lot in the media as well, because, I mean, I agree with his anti-war stance. I mean, I'm pretty anti-war. I mean, I think we all pretty much are on the fiends, you know, and it's, you know, you see this, especially in the sort of right-wing press here, you know, they're ready to say that he's a threat to our national security, and if he was Prime Minister, you know, I don't know what they think would be happening. I don't know if they think that, you know, ISIS or IS or whatever they're called this week would be, you know, beheading people in the streets or something, but like, he's being quite roundly criticised, and that's a bit worrying as well. I mean, like, for example, it was the anniversary of Armistice Day recently, when World War One basically ended, And this was before the Paris attacks. And I remember reading an article about, it was in this paper called The Telegraph, which is it's a pretty conservative paper here. And there was an article by someone saying Britain should find its fighting spirit again, and we shouldn't be afraid to basically march all over the world and bomb anyone that we don't like, you know, and this kind of thing. And I was having a wee peruse there on the break over the Telegraph website, and there's more of this kind of rhetoric, this kind of, you know, well, we shouldn't be listening to this deranged lefty, you know, we should be prepared to fight and all this kind of thing. And I mean, I don't know, this will be interesting as well, like, you heard it in France, and I've heard it a lot on the British media, the word war keeps coming up, you know, in reference to these attacks in Paris, you know, it was like, this is an act of war, ISIS have declared war, you know, and it's always the word war keeps coming up. And it almost seems like, you know, we'll just throw that in all the time, we'll just keep saying war, war, war. Because, like, I mean, it's one of these things, sort of after 9/11, you know, and you see it all the time. When something like this happens, you know, the impulse is immediately, it's like, who's responsible? Let's get there. Let's deal with them. I mean, there's always these things that get countries into war. I mean, if I could just take the US as an example, the sinking of the Lusitania got them into World War One, bombing of Pearl Harbor, World War Two, Gulf of Tonkin incident, Vietnam, on and on and on. 9/11, the Iraq war keeps going on. It's always like something happens and then the immediate impulse is war. I mean, have you heard that? Have you heard the war rhetoric been ramping up? Have you heard people talking about that in the US?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, people would like to really invade Syria and definitely provide support, military support to France.
Worrying, I mean.
Yeah.
It really is. And I mean, the other thing as well that's been sort of getting on my goat as well is there's been a lot of, you know, there's been a lot of people, and it's all this, it's this kind of stuff of like, oh, this is what Islam's all about, and this is what these Muslims want to kill us all, and things like that. And, you know, there's been people talking about, oh, some Muslims are in cahoots with this kind of thing and they quietly sympathize with it. And that's just nonsense. You know, these people have this IS mob, and what they have is a political agenda, really. And, you know, they're using Islam, basically. I mean, the majority of Muslims that, you know, I speak to personally think that this is ridiculous. They think it's a distortion and a perversion of their faith. And, I mean, but a lot of people are buying into this. I mean, I even heard that there was a mosque in France, I believe, that was set on fire just afterwards. And there's been, like, I think there's been, like, graffiti and that sprayed on mosques in France and things like that. And that's dangerous as well because, I mean, I know that in the UK here, there's a large Muslim population. And they're kind of us all over Europe. And you just can't tar people with that brush. You can't do it, because if you're going to start tarring people with that same brush, then you're going to have to do it all around the board. If you're going to say that all Muslims support this kind of Islamic terrorism, then you're going to have to say that, you know, all Catholics support the IRA and all Christians support the Ku Klux Klan and all this kind of thing, which is not true. You know, and it's the same with, you know, Muslims. They don't all support this kind of behaviour, you know. Islam is actually, I mean, Islam is generally quite a peaceful faith, you know. And you get these people that roundly criticise the Quran who have blatantly never read the thing in the first place. And that kind of bothers me as well, you know, this kind of anti-Muslim rhetoric, because you're in danger of causing a lot more trouble, because you do get some of these people that do think, oh, well, it's all Muslims, and then that's going to lead to more violence, more unnecessary violence. You know, you're going to have people who are quite peacefully practicing a faith getting caught up in this, you know. I don't know, is that a thing in America? I mean, I know that after 9/11, there was quite a lot of anti-Muslim sentiment. You hearing that kind of thing?
Definitely, yeah. It's been very popular with the conservative right here as well. the Islamophobia. And it is really disappointing because the reason why terrorists cells pop up is these people are, at least this is what they say, is they're angry with foreign policy, right? Because we're meddling in their, I'm not doing, but the American government and most of the European governments probably are interfering in their affairs. Like, we invaded Iraq more than once. And I said we again, but so they're upset about that. And so that breeds more dissent and more people that are angry, and it just fosters that anger, and then it eventually blows up in these attacks. And I'm not excusing the actions of these people. It's definitely a shame that they do that, and it's definitely not something that anybody should be proud of, to think that using violence as a way to solve your issues. But when we respond with hatred and violence that without care and just kind of blaming this group, it just makes that group more angry, and it separates people, and it just fuels hatred. And you definitely see that with what's happening right now, and it's really a shame, because that's just gonna beget more violence and more hatred that we see, and more terror.
Mm-hmm. I think it was Ron Paul, our favorite Freedom Fiends government thug, ex-government thug. I think it was him that said they're over here because we're over there, you know, and reference to like terrorists and things like that. Because I mean, you've seen this all the time, you know. You get some young impressionable people, and what they're seeing of the US is soldiers walking down their streets, you know, drones flying over their heads and things like that. I mean, how do you think that that's not going to radicalize people? I mean, I can even point to, this came up in the news recently, in the 70s there was a massacre. I'm comfortable using the word massacre for this. In Ireland, that was known as Bloody Sunday, where people from the paratroop regiment of the British Army killed a lot of innocent civilians who were on a human rights march. And after that, the IRA had a surge in recruitment with young people who'd seen innocent people slaughtered in the streets, you know. And it's the same thing. If you do this, if you react in this violent way, that's what's going to happen. You're going to radicalize more people and have more problems. We'll be back.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations, and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
This is the Freedom Fiends, and we're back. We're talking about the attacks in France. This is Nick Hazelton, and I'm here with Dan Green from Scotland. He is our European correspondent, and we were talking over the break about some misconceptions on the media, or on social media, where people are not hearing, I guess, the full truth, or just don't know exactly what's going on. I don't know what's going on, so I don't know what what people are posting are true or not. But I guess you have some information on that, don't you, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, like, we're in the sort of this crazy social media age where, you know, a lot of news spreads, but then so does a whole lot of misinformation. And like, I came across like an article, and they'd put in a lot of the things that people are sort of getting wrong. And, you know, some of it's not that major, but, you know, I think it's kind of relevant because it does sort of shape the discourse on these sort of things. There's been stuff like, they said there was like, those pictures that surfaced of a supposed like march in Germany that was supposed to be, you know, like in support of this, but like it was an old picture basically of an older march, you know. Donald Trump got caught up in this because someone said to me that like, oh, Donald Trump started talking about gun control in Paris and that. Donald Trump did mention gun control in France, but that was after the Charlie Hebdo attacks. He didn't say anything about that after these. You know, and there's even kind of things that maybe they're not so important, but again, it's just an illustration of what can happen. You know, the band that were playing at the Bataclan Theatre that was attacked were called the Eagles of Death Metal. And there's a picture of them from the stage at their Dublin gig, you know, and that was surfacing around as a picture of them at the Bataclan Theatre, you know. There's another one as well. It was supposedly a German solidarity march, but it was actually a Pegida march, and Pegida are this anti-Islamic mob that have been kicking about. Again, like, it's, these photos are surfacing. There's different ones, like, you know, one depicting the Eiffel Tower being darkened. Again, that was an old photo from before. Even Uber get caught up in this because there was claims that they were raising their prices to take people around. And again, not true. But it just shows you how these, even, you know, some of them you might think, well, some of that sounds a bit trivial. And maybe it does. But shows how anything can spread like that in social media, you know, because a lot of people will just read anything that they see online. You know, I personally know people who see a meme and then they assume that it's true because somebody went to the trouble to make a meme about it, you know, and it can be kind of worrying, you know, all this, because it's a lot of misinformation. And, you know, yeah, you've got to be careful on social media because you don't know what kind of moron's posting what.
Oh, absolutely. I've caught myself liking stuff that I did not fact check on, and then later somebody posts like the Snopes article or something showing that was not true, and I'm just like, oh man, really gotta watch my biases. But no, that totally happens, and it happens to the best of us. So yeah, you gotta be careful on social media, especially as it's public.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's funny how we're a totally different age in terms of information, you know, because that's the thing. I mean, because good information and the truth can spread just as quickly as nonsense and misinformation. But like, you know, and then it can feed into, I wanted to mention this because we were talking a bit earlier about sort of far right groups in Britain. And I've watched a recent documentary. There's a new group that have sprang up in Britain called Britain First. And I don't care if they come after me, I couldn't care less. They're just basically, we've had these far right groups like this for years, the National Front, the British National Party. They constantly just change and become something different. And I've not really heard what they've been doing since these attacks. I try not to read their nonsense, but like, they've been starting all this kind of, well, I'll probably talk a bit more about it in the next segment of the second hour. But they're another one of these groups that have surfaced about, and they're ultra paranoid, they're anti-Muslim, and their thinking is, let's just say, inaccurate's too, that's too nice a word. You know, so is nonsense. There's some words I would like to use for it, but they're not radio friendly as such. But we'll mention that a bit. And then what we'll do is, after we've wrapped up all the fear with Paris, we're going to lighten it up, because we're not going to leave you scared. We would not do that.
Back in the second hour.
Yeah, enjoy the news.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Re-Education Center's low orbit ion cannon. I atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by the BIPCOT NAY government license, and this allows reuse by anyone, anyone at all, except for governments, for obvious reasons. So, I'm Dan Green, and we're back for the second hour. I'm here with Nick Hazelton. We've been talking a lot about terrorism and the Paris attacks in the first hour. Nick, how's your fear levels? Are you gripped with fear yet?
I'm shaking in my boots. No, I'm very safe here in Oregon, I'd like to think. The thing I'm most scared of is the government.
That's wise. It's a thing to be scared of. And Just to make this perfectly clear, we're not making light of these attacks or anything like that, or anything like this at all. But, you know, there's no need for some of the extreme fear. There's no need to be scared to go out your door, because, you know, people that perpetrate, you know, horrific crimes like this, that's what they want. They want you to be scared, you know. And I just kind of want to mention this as well. I always mention 1984. I'm a stereotypical libertarian in that kind of context. 1984, not the year, but the book by George Orwell. And the funny thing is, in 1984, they don't, like, when people are dissenting against the totalitarian government in that book, they don't, the government, they don't kill people and make martyrs of people, because they understand that when you make martyrs of someone, all that happens basically there is that people get wound up about it. What they do in that book is they take people and they reprogram them, they brainwash them, and they put them back out into society, and that kind of kills the hope, you know. And groups like this, all they do by, you know, killing these innocent people who are just going out on a Friday night to watch a football game or a concert, all they do is they mobilise people, they energise people to be against their cause. So maybe we should be dropping, well, maybe we shouldn't be dropping copies of 1984, actually, that'd be a bad idea. But I'm not trying to help them out here, I'm just saying their strategy is ridiculous, their ideology is ridiculous, you know. And it's a perversion of Islam. I just want to throw that in there before we go any further.
Yeah, definitely. I think you're totally right. It's disappointing to watch things progress the way they go. And to an extent, right, it's just history repeating itself, and we just have some fancy new technology. And it's the same thing over and over again. Just the government's getting a little bit better at killing people with, I guess, the less action. They have their drones to do it now, and they don't need to amass a million-man army to go fight other people. Though they I don't know actually how large any militaries are population-wise, but they're still pretty large. But they don't need that much. So it is disappointing to see that with all this new technology, that's the way we decide to use it. And it's really sad to see that this is the way that people want to use it, even if it is in reaction to other violence.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And before the break, I'd mentioned a little bit about the newest far-right mob that are in Britain. They're called Britain First. I haven't really seen what their rhetoric's been since this attack, because I prefer not to read their lies and nonsense. But I watched a documentary a little bit about them. This was, maybe a month or so ago, and it's interesting. They are this typical bunch of racists who claim that they're not racist, they're just concerned about the Islamification of Britain. This word Islamification suddenly come into use a lot recently, I've noticed it. And it's funny because, I mean, you could say, well, the documentary was biased and one-sided against them, and to be fair, it kind of was. But I think that it, from people that I've come into contact with who buy into this sort of far-right, almost neo-Nazi-ish, I don't try to use that term lightly, but, you know, it kind of is, ideology. For example, these people, and they're walking about with crosses and stuff, you know, and they're talking about, they're criticising Muslims and talking about the only way to salvation is through Jesus Christ and things like that. Do they not realise the Muslims I know revere Jesus Christ very highly as a prophet of God? Maybe they didn't get that part. Obviously not. The other thing is, like, it kind of showed you some of their marches, because the far right aren't as, in Britain, they're not as, they don't have the same followings they do maybe in some other countries in Europe, thankfully. And some of their marches were just ludicrous. They tried to march to this town, Luton. Luton is in England, and it's a very racially diverse city. And they ended up marching around like a car park in an industrial estate, and like hardly anybody showed up. And I remember they were passing out newspapers in one scene in this documentary, and, you know, they're wee propaganda papers, and this guy took one, this just random guy in the street, and so the documentary crew interviewed him, and they're like, so are you took one of those papers? And he was like, yeah. Like, are you concerned about what's going on? He went, oh yes, very concerned. And they went, well, what is it that's going on? And he just kind of stared blankly at them. And then he just kind of pointed to the paper and he went, this. So, like, it's not like he's sitting there going, yes, well, the Wahhabist influence on Islam has been, you know, it's nothing like that. He was just like, this, whatever's in this paper, you know. And I've seen a lot of people who buy into this ideology are these kind of, I mean, I'm not trying to make fun of, you know, people in general, but, like, I think, you know, like, this is the kind of people that get led into this sort of ideology. And it's the same on the Islamic side, because these guys who, you know, committed these atrocities in Paris, they were all young guys. I think the oldest one was like 31, one was 28, one guy was 20, you know. And it shows that the power brainwashing can have on people, especially at a young age like that. You know, you've been libertarianly brainwashed, Nick.
Yeah, I've been brainwashed to not use violence, which I suppose is a good thing.
I think so. Brainwashed in the right way. But, you know, it shows you, I mean, it's funny because, you know, the guys that coordinate these attacks, it's funny how they're not the ones blowing themselves up, you know. I've kind of noticed that. I mean, I can't remember the guy's name, but they're talking about this guy, I think he's Belgian, that supposedly masterminded these, you know, the word mastermind, well, supposedly masterminded these attacks in Paris. And, you know, again, I don't see him blowing himself up. I didn't see Bin Laden blowing himself up, you know. And it's funny, you know, how, like, it always seems to me, I kind of, in a way, sometimes feel sorry for these guys, because they've obviously been fed a poisonous distortion of Islam that's got a major, major political slant on it. And, you know, they've bought it. And they've bought it in such a way that they've paid with their lives for it. You know, and I think it's about, some people may go, oh, you're sympathising with them. I think it's a shame that there are people who have taken advantage of these young, impressionable people and got them to do horrible things like that.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's really kind of the theme that we've been talking about is largely collectivism. You know, we're collectivizing these people, and that's what happens is if you separate people out into groups and you use that to hold something against them, right? There's just because they hold this particular religion or just because they live in this particular place, that gives you an excuse to hate them. And that's really damaging, and it doesn't help anybody. So the extremists have done that to the Western world. So everybody is the same in the Western world. They don't like Islam. Everybody hates us. So let's use violence. We're going to attack them. We hate them. And then they do that. And then we respond by doing the same to Muslims and people from the Middle East, right? And it's really disappointing to see that, because it's not all Muslims, like you've been saying, like we've been saying this whole past hour and 15 minutes, right? It's not all of them. It's just a very small minority. And so it's sad that this is the way that people react to such a small minority, even though they can seem to make a very big difference in their actions. Well, I don't know if they make a difference in the way they want to, but they do definitely create a ruckus, and they definitely do create a stir in the world. So it's sad that that happens.
Mm. And again, we're talking a lot about fear and sort of climate of fear. It's fear on all sides, you know. And when you're driven by fear like that, I mean, take a lot of the, for example, like I see a lot of dogs who are quite aggressive, and a lot of those dogs that are very aggressive and violent, it's because they're scared, and that's, you know, they're nervous, and that's the way they know how to react. And, you know, people, you know, we're animals too. If you're alive on the earth, you're either a plant or an animal. We might be a higher level of animal, you know, but we still have animal impulses, animal reactions. And when you have this kind of, when your life is driven by fear, then, you know, you're going to lash out in irrational ways. You know, when you're full of fear, it's humanity doesn't become us. You know, like, all, it's us and them when you're stuck in a fear mindset. All humanity's us and them. They're them and we're us, and, you know, they can't be us. And then there's different levels of who's them and us, you know. Whereas if you can take away fear, you know, then, you know, why can't everyone just be us, you know? And I mean, it's the same everywhere. I mean, like, even that far-right mob I was talking about here, Britain First, they're all full of fear as well. I mean, there was a scene in that documentary when they had to go, it was to do with, they basically provoked a bunch of people in this city, Luton, to, you know, basically abuse them, and then so they can film it, put it on YouTube and go, see, we told you these people are all barbarians, look at the way they reacted to us, you know, in our own country and all this kind of thing. And when they were going into this police station to be talked to be interviewed about it, I mean, they were like, oh, we'll probably get detained and stuff, and we might not be back out. And they were like, they were out in an hour, you know. And then they showed you them as well on like a Saturday night, and the two leaders, this girl and this guy, they were young. I mean, they were like, I think she was in her late 20s and he was in his early 30s. And they were in an empty pool hall on a Saturday night with no one in it because they were scared to go anywhere, you know, and they moved house every 6 months. So everyone, you know, if you're living in fear, that's how your life's going to turn out. And if that's the way you want it, good luck to you.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
And we're here with the Freedom Fiends. This is Nick Hazelton and Dan Green, and we are still talking about the situation in France and around the world, how their reactions are happening, and it's been an interesting discussion. And I think it's interesting how everybody, and we brought this up last segment, how this theme is that we're bringing up is collectivization and fear, and using these it's an interesting way to think about things, and being a collectivist, I'm not saying that I am, but it's an interesting way that these people these people think, and it's really kind of disappointing how everybody gets grouped into these groups, whether they be Muslims being grouped in with all the Islamic extremists, or whether it be Westerners grouped in as or with the military and the government that is using drone strikes and bombings to manipulate the situation in the Middle East. Everybody's getting thrown into a group, and then everybody gets mad at each other because everybody's angry at each other. It's just a cycle of anger and hatred and fear that keeps happening. So that's what we're talking about. And I don't know how many times we've mentioned this, but Dan is in Scotland, and that puts him very close to the situation there, and it's pretty dire and pretty serious.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, amongst all this kind of thing, you know, we have to, you know, we're trying to put this in some sort of perspective. I actually wanted to read something out because I heard it last night when I was watching the news, and I thought for me it was a great response to this. There was a guy called Antoine Lieris, and he is a French journalist, and his wife was killed in these attacks. Mm-hmm. And he basically wrote this note, and I'd like to read it in its entirety because I think it's very good. Right, he said, on Friday evening, you stole the life of his wife died, right, just so we're clear, this is who he's writing about. On Friday evening, you stole the life of an exceptional person, the love of my life, the mother of my son, but you will not have my hatred. I don't know who you are, and I don't want to know. You are dead souls. If this God for whom you kill blindly made us in his image, every bullet in the body of my wife is a wound in his heart. So no, I will not give you the satisfaction of hating you. You obviously want it, but to respond to hatred with anger would be to give in to the same ignorance that made you what you are. You would like me to be scared, for me to look at my fellow citizens with a suspicious eye, to sacrifice my liberty for security. You have lost. The same player still plays. I saw her this morning, at last, after nights and days of waiting. She was as beautiful as when she left on Friday evening. As beautiful as when I fell head over heels in love with her more than 12 years ago. Of course, I am devastated with grief. I grant you this small victory, but it will be short-lived. I know she will be with us every day, and we will find each other in heaven with free souls, which she will never have. Us two, my son and I, we will be stronger than every army in the world. I cannot waste any more time on you, as I must go back to my son, who has just woken up from his nap. He is just 17 months old. He will eat a snack like every other day. Then we are going to play like every other day. And all his life, this little boy will insult you by being happy and free, because you will never have his hatred either. Is that not beautiful?
Oh, yeah, that brings tears to my eyes, honestly. That's really powerful, because that's something super crazy. To lose a loved one, especially a really close loved one, and a mother, that's just a terrible thing. And that, if you have, anybody has an excuse to be angry and to have hate, right, it's that guy. And it shows an extreme amount of the reasonability and empathy to be able to express that. I'm surprised, and I'm glad that there is somebody out there with that sentiment. That's something that I try to strive for in my life, to be able to think that way when people have done me wrong.
Absolutely. I mean, it's incredible that he can say something like that, you know, so soon after what's happened to him. And I totally agree with his sentiment. You know, like you said, he could easily be saying, you know, let's get in these planes and let's bomb them to kingdom come. But he's taking a higher route, you know. He's not stooping to their level, you know, and I think that's very important. I mean, I heard that in the news and last night, and I was all teared up. I was like, oh, man. But we're going to lighten it up after this segment. With that being said, we'll make you laugh a bit. We'll talk about fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Back on the Freedom Fiends, Dan Green and Nick Hazelton, and we left you with quite an emotional note, you know, to do with the Paris attacks. Now we're going to try and lighten things up, because we've spent the whole show talking about this, you know, and I think we've spent enough time on it. We've said what we needed to say, you know, and we're saying don't be filled with hate about these things. Don't be paranoid. You know, that's not to say don't take precautions, don't prepare for things, you know. And speaking of preparation, my good friend Nick here is a farmer, and we're going to move on to something a bit lighter. So, Nick, give us some updates on how your farming's going.
I will do that. But first of all, it just kind of reminded me because somebody tagged me in this video on Facebook. Do you know Mitchell and Webb?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm okay. A big fan.
So, yeah, one of my old teachers was a really big fan of them. And he didn't show us this in school, but he did tell me about it on the side, I think. It's a video about farming. And it starts out with this English guy thing. I don't know the accent. Maybe it's Scottish. I don't know. But it's somebody from the UK. Okay, and he pulls up out of, like, he walks out of a barn and he pulls out this wad of cash, and he says, "You know where I got this?" I can't do the accent. I won't try the accent. He says, it's super vulgar, but he says, "I got it from bleeping farming. I got it from corn. You know what corn? It grows out of the bleeping ground." And it just made me laugh because he goes on about this whole thing, talking about sheep and chickens. It's like, you know, eggs, it comes out of them. It's free money. And I just thought that was so funny. And somebody tagged me about it. I think it was Jim Jesus tagged me on it. And he says, this looks like, or this sounds like Nick Hazelton mixed with Dan Green. I just thought that was so perfect. But it's really funny. If you look up farming Mitchell and Webb, you'll find it. But anyway, it's starting to kind of look like that, because the way I do my farm, especially with the yaks, I put very little into them themselves. I've spent a good amount of money on infrastructure, building fences and facilities to handle them, but I put almost nothing into them. I feed them all grass. Sometimes I feed hay, but really, it's hardly any money put into them. And now I'm finally starting to make some money back off of their initial cost. I haven't paid them back yet, buying my initial herd. But I've butchered a yak. Many of the listeners will know this. I butchered a yak probably a couple months ago, and I've been selling the meat, and it's been really nice to make some revenue. And just recently, I got somebody to start selling some of the meat for me. This is a lady down the road. She's a fellow farmer. She's actually been a little bit of a mentor in a lot of ways for me. I just, every time she says to do something about farming, I try to do it. It's like Michael Dean for me and farming. Whatever Michael says to do about a podcast, I do it. Whatever Beth Wynacki says about farming, I do it. And so she decided to pick up my to meet and advertise it to the people that she's selling produce to. So that's really exciting for me, and I'm really happy about that.
Nice. I mean, I really respect, I was saying to you during the break, I respect your patience and work with farming, because I have some relatives in Ireland that farm, and quite frankly, it seems like a whole lot of effort.
What are your family, what kind of animals do they raise?
Cows, sheep, and chickens.
Okay. Yeah, those are fun. I can't stand sheep. Sheep are annoying. They're probably the dumbest animals on earth. I think that they're stupider than chickens. honestly.
Sheep racism.
Yeah.
If such a thing exists. Actually, I find it funny how docile sheep are. I mean, like, I'm a postman, and where I deliver my mail is quite a rural area. And, you know, I'll see sheep sort of standing about in a field, and, like, birds will just land on their backs and just sort of hang out on their backs, and the sheep don't even seem to be aware that they're there or care.
That's funny. I have seen that with sheep before out in the field. It's pretty interesting to watch them do that.
It's weird, but like even that Mitchell Webb thing you said about it grows in the ground, it's free money. They're not wrong.
Well, yeah, that's one of the funny things, because it seems like if you just look at it like that, man, this should be a really lucrative thing. But, you know, it's not. There's quite a bit of work to be put into it. One of the things I like to say is, farming's a lot of running, right? I run a lot, and it's either chasing after animals or running from them. And it's not exactly the easiest thing. It can be fun. I think that running from animals is that can be entertaining. Enthralling. I guess it's exciting. There we go. It's very exciting to run away from angry animals, but it's not so fun to run after them. And it's not fun to try and catch any of them.
It keeps you fit, though.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we actually. Oh yeah, we had the yak butchers. We have all that meat that I'm selling, and I also sell the pigs. And just recently, me and my dad slaughtered our own in the front yard. We did it, and that was an interesting experience doing our own meat and cutting it up all on our own. We actually got to make lard, and we made our hams. We didn't smoke any of the meat, but we just cut it up and then we packaged and froze it for ourselves. And that was it was not the funnest thing, but it was definitely an experience. And I think that a lot of people don't get to have that, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, I don't know if I'd have the stomach for it. I mean, I mentioned the Fiends before. I used to work as an undertaker, and like, I had the stomach to do things like that, you know, embalming and things like that. That was okay. But like, it's funny, like I could assist in embalming a dead body and have no issues with it. But then if you put something like surgery on TV or like someone like butchering an animal, then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, you know, like, I think it's the whole, I don't know. I think it's, well, like I actually used to work in a butcher's as well. I used to work in a supermarket, but the butcher section of it. And I was actually fine doing that kind of thing because everything was sort of already dead, you know. So yeah, that wasn't the issue, you know. But like, I mean, it's a good thing as well because, you know, we are talking about how, you know, the world is kind of going this kind of scary way. And, you know, you never know if another war could pop up, you know, and if that kind of thing happens and the supermarkets, you know, the food dries up, you know, I'm in trouble, whereas you know what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah, that is definitely true to an extent. Yeah, that's one thing that we keep in mind, and that's kind of why we do it here at our family, is we want to be prepared to an extent because we're worried about an earthquake happening. There's supposed to be a large earthquake that could happen in our area anytime. So it's nice to be able to know what we're doing in that regard. And it wasn't too bad when we slaughtered the animal. There was not a lot of blood. It was a small pig. And it was very quick. That animal was dead within seconds. So that wasn't too bad. But if you can't do blood, it's probably something that you should not do, slaughtering animals. And I didn't have too much of a problem cutting up the meat, like you were saying, in the actually doing the butchering part. And I didn't have an issue doing the slaughtering because I knew he was a happy animal when it happened. And I knew it was going to be very quick. But the one thing that I couldn't do, because I didn't do the skinning. I let my dad do that part, and that took like hours. We were sitting outside. I was watching him do it. And afterwards, we had duck meat for dinner. It was like a whole duck, and I just could not eat it because of the bones and the skin that were still on the bird. I was like, nah, I can't eat this today. So I didn't eat any. I didn't eat any meat until the next day. But then I had ground up sausage. So that wasn't too bad. But I don't really like eating meat that looks like it's still kind of intact anymore. For the last few days, I haven't been able to do that.
I mean, it must be a good feeling to know where your meat comes from, you know, because when I go out and buy meat, you know, like. Yeah, I don't, you know, it'll say like, oh, reared in this farm and it's, you know, Aberdeen Angus or whatever, but like, I'm disconnected from it, you know. I don't really know exactly where it's come from. And like, it's funny because like, I think as well, like, there was a time when, you know, I'm going back, like, there was a time, but, you know, there was a time when people were more sort of connected with, you know, their food and like natural things like farming and stuff. And I think that's been sort of lost over the years, you know, with the kind of modern society we live in, because, you know, we have these massive kind of hyper farms now and things like that. And, you know, all this prepackaged meat that comes from all over the world and is frozen and stuff. So it must actually be good to be eating something and to know exactly where it's come from.
Oh, definitely. It's really something, I don't really know how to describe it, but it's nice to know, like, I raised this animal, I know exactly where it's been, and I took care of it. This is my animal, and I know exactly what into this thing. And so, yeah, that's really nice. And it's similar to hunting, I think. Have you ever gone hunting and gotten an animal?
Never. I've never done it.
Okay. I don't hunt deer or anything, but there was one time where... I got a bird. It was a. I don't know if this was exactly legal.
But, oh, be careful.
Yeah, I may or may not have shot a pheasant, and we ate it. And man, that was one of the best things ever. Is actually getting an animal that you've killed. I think it's something pretty primal, probably deep inside, where it's like, you know, hunter gatherer instincts. So I think that, yeah, doing your own animal and yeah, preparing it yourself from when you see it in the wild or from birth, when you raise it yourself, there is definitely something about eating your own food, even with vegetables and fruit and, you know, produce sort of thing. It's definitely something to be able to say, like, yeah, this was my meat.
Yeah, I mean, I've never gone hunting, but like, I'm all Buddhist and stuff, so like, I don't even kill flies, so hunting would be a nightmare for me. That wouldn't go well. Yeah. We'll take a trip to the market and we'll be back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
And we are back. This is the final segment of the Freedom Fiends. This is Nick Hazelton. I'm here with Dan Green, and we were talking about the attacks in France earlier this hour and last hour, but we decided to bring it back on a happier note. Last segment, we were talking about some farming stuff, and we were talking about meet, and there's something that is kind of interesting. I don't know when this happened. I think it was just recently, and this month. I know that, but it sounds like the United States has come to a deal with Scotland's rural affairs. I don't know exactly what the government agencies that are responsible for spreading of haggis around the world, but the United States has had a ban on sheep lung, or just kind of, I think, lung in general, since 1971, and this is the USDA sort of thing, and so the Scottish have not been able to import or export haggis to the United States because of the key ingredient, sheep's lung. So what exactly is haggis for people that don't know, Dan?
Well, this racism will not stand, you know. haggis is, it's a interesting national dish. It is made with, like, you know, there's other things in it, like oats and things as well, but, like, you know, there's basically, I try not to think about too much what's in it, but I know a lot of people that don't like haggis, but I'm one of these stereotypical Scottish people. I like haggis, I really do, you know. Any excuse for a bit of haggis. It's a kind of odd taste, but, like, I've had it for years, and, you know, like, Michael was making fun of me one time because I mentioned, like, the sort of dish you have it in is generally called haggis, neeps and tatties, which basically means haggis, turnip and potatoes. It's just the sort of traditional way of saying it. And that's one of the things I'm sort of struggling with, because I sort of mentioned before that, like, you know, I'm kind of all Buddhist now, and I did go, I was saying to you during the break, I went vegetarian for a while, and then I went back to eating meat. I still am eating meat, but I'm sort of getting back more into the sort of Buddhist thing, and I'm sort of flirting with the idea of going vegetarian again, you know, and it might sound strange to say that, considering that I love haggis, considering what's in haggis, but I don't know, it's one of those things. I know a lot of people that don't like it, but, I mean, there is vegetarian haggis, if you can believe that. I'm telling you. Like, I've had it before, actually. It's not bad. I mean, it's kind of like the sort of onion, carrots, mushrooms, sort of lentils and oats and things like that in it. It's like buckwheat and things like that. It's all right. I mean, it's not actual haggis. You know, it's not quite the same. But a lot of people, haggis divides opinion. It's a very divisive dish. I would recommend people try it, though, you know, just for the experience of it. Have you ever had it yourself, Nick?
I have not. I have never seen it served anywhere. I would be interested in trying it at least once.
Put it on your bucket list.
I will. Well, now we'll be able to have it. We won't have, in the States, I guess we won't have real authentic haggis because they won't let us eat sheep lungs. But I'll try and get my hands on it when it's available.
You know, I kind of wonder as well, like, see the haggis you get in supermarkets here. I haven't really delved into the ingredients, but I wonder how much of that stuff is actually in it, you know, or if it's kind of, if when it's mass produced, it's maybe scaled back a bit, you know, like, as opposed to more traditional haggis, you know, that's something I would need to look into. I mean, like I said, I like it, and it's one of those things that are, like, you can get it in different forms here. You can get it in, like, wee slices and stuff like that, or you could get, like, a full-on haggis if you want it. You could even get, so, you know, kind of, call them ready meals, you know, these kind of microwavable things that are in a tray, and you know, you put it in a microwave and your dinner's ready in like 4 minutes. You can get sort of haggis versions of that. Not great, wouldn't really recommend that for a first go, if I'm being honest, but quite common. I would recommend you try it for fun.
I will. All right. That was the Freedom Fiends talking about France attacks, yak, or not yak. We talked about yaks last segment, but also about haggis. I should make yak haggis.
Yaggis. It would be interesting. If you do that, I want some shipped over.
I will do it.
the only show where we can get from, you know, terrorism to haggis in the one show.
Freedom Fiends.
For more of that.